This is Brother Peter Diamond, VaticanCatholic.com. A lawyer and a former high-ranking Freemason named John Salza recently authored an attack on the Sedevacantist position. It was called The Errors of Sedevacantism and Ecclesiastical Law. His article appeared in the false traditionalist publication The Remnant in the July 15, 2010 issue. On our website, we recently posted an article that refutes Salza's article in detail. It carefully examines his arguments and identifies his primary errors and distortions of Catholic teaching. It also takes some time to expose his distortion of canon law. The article also covers how, in the process of making his arguments against the Sedevacantist position, John Salza falls into numerous, massive contradictions. You will find a link to that article in the description of part one of this video. But I want to discuss some of the highlights and the main points in this video. First of all, it should be pointed out that this article that Salza authored was somewhat persuasive for certain people. We received some letters from a few individuals who attached Salza's article as if it constituted a total refutation of the Sedevacantist position. That's why exposing the massive problems with his article and refuting his arguments was necessary and important. I also want to say that on August 23rd, 2010, I challenged John Salza to a debate on the topic of Sedevacantism. This was before my article came out, and I sent him an email which stated, "Hi John, my name is Brother Peter Diamond. I'm a member of Most Holy Family Monastery. You're probably familiar with us or with some of our material. I was wondering if you would be interested in a recorded telephone conversation / debate on the issue of Sedevacantism, that is, whether Benedict XVI is the Pope. I realize that you consider Benedict XVI to be a valid Pope and that you believe the Sedevacantists are quite wrong. I think a conversation on this matter would be very valuable and interesting for people. Please let me know if you are interested. Thanks, Brother Peter Diamond." And this email was not only sent to his email address, but we sent the same email by certified letter. It was signed for at his address. To this date, we have not received any response to the debate challenge. And we believe that he's avoiding us because he's afraid to do it. And he realizes that his arguments would not hold up in such a debate. Moreover, he couldn't escape addressing the heresies of Benedict XVI, which absolutely make a mockery out of the position he holds, and completely refute any idea that Benedict XVI is a valid pope. Furthermore, since he actually had the audacity to call Sedevacantists, quote, empty heads, or say that they should be called empty heads, the fact that he's afraid to engage in a debate with us really speaks to his insecurity, his cowardice, and his inability to defend his position. Now, I want to move to summarizing the main problems with Salza's argument so that people understand how fallacious it is. Later on, I will get into his massive contradictions and show how, in the second half of his article, he actually denies his central argument. But let's now look at his primary error. In his article, Salza basically tries to draw a key distinction. At the beginning of his article, he admits that Canon 188.4 of the 1917 Code of Canon Law teaches that those who publicly defect from the faith lose their offices without any declaration. It's plain, it's clear, it's right in canon law, and this is the application of the principle that heretics are automatically expelled from the church and lose all authority within the church. So at the beginning of his article, to sort of pay lip service to this fact, which no one can refute, he says that the Sedevacantists are right in asserting that this is the teaching of the divine law. Quote, "Sedevacantists correctly maintain that divine law expels a formal heretic from the church without further declaration. They point to Canon 188, paragraph 4 of the 1917 Code, which says that, quote, all offices whatsoever fall vacant and without any declaration if the cleric publicly defects from the faith," end quote. But then he goes on to draw what he thinks is his key distinction. He says, quote, "However, The same code of canon law also determines how we know a cleric has publicly defected from the faith and lost his office as a result of the defection. The church tells us, end quote. So, as I explained in my article, he tries to insert this crucial distinction between number one, the fact that yes, a heretic does lose his office and is expelled from the church ipso facto without any declaration. And number two, but we must have a declaration from the church to know to whom this principle has applied. So yes, number one, heretics lose their offices without declaration, but he claims number two is the fact that the church must declare that someone falls into this category. This is his primary distinction in his article, one that he contradicts, as I will show later on, and one that I carefully refute in the article. And what's interesting about his article is that it's what I call intellectual black magic. Because as you read this article, he starts out by admitting this principle that heretics lose their offices without declaration. But then he goes through all of these involved arguments from canon law to create the impression that you need a declaration for all of it. And so the effect for the person who cannot see through its subterfuge is that he essentially turns on its head the principle that he admitted at the beginning. Without declaration turns into, you must have a declaration. And by the end of the article, they've forgotten what he already admitted, that heretics lose their offices without any declaration. And I'm going to go through and expose the dishonest way in which he did this and how in each case his arguments are false. So let's zero in on this second part of his claim, that we must have a declaration from the church to know to whom this applies. In other words, in order to identify that someone falls into this category of having lost his office without declaration, we need a declaration. Is that what the church teaches? We all agree it teaches number one, they lose their offices if they are in fact heretics. But does it teach number two, that we cannot know someone is a heretic and falls into this category where he has lost his office without declaration until the church declares it concerning him? No, it is not the church's teaching, as I will show. But the first thing I want to say, think about the logic of this argument. What would be the point of the church's teaching and the divine law that heretics lose their offices without any declaration if we must always wait for a declaration from the church to reject that individual? The teaching would be pointless, because in each case you would have to wait for the declaration. It would have no practical effect or ramifications whatsoever for the people who are subject to the heretic. So, refuting his principle number two, the second part of his distinction, I'm going to quote Pope Paul IV's bull, Cum Ex Apostolatus Officio, February 15, 1559. I'm just going to quickly summarize it. I'm not going to quote the whole thing. Salza also makes reference to this bull in his article. And as most people familiar with our material and this issue know, it teaches that the election of a heretic to the papal office would be invalid without any declaration. Okay, so it teaches principle number one, that we all agree, that heretics cannot retain or even be elevated to offices within the church. But it also refutes Salza's number two, because Pope Paul IV not only teaches that the heretic cannot have the office, that he would not be the pope, even if all the cardinals accept him, but Pope Paul IV also teaches that any and all persons who would have been subject to those thus promoted or elevated, referring to people who are elected as heretics, including the laity, quote, shall be permitted at any time to withdraw with impunity from obedience and devotion to those thus promoted or elevated, and to avoid them as warlocks, heathens, publicans, and heresiarchs. End quote. So Pope Paul IV completely refutes and destroys Salza's argument and his whole article and his key distinction, because he not only says, number one, that the heretic will not have the office, because he can't, he's not in the church, but he says the opposite of Salza on number two, that Catholics, before any declaration has been made, can reject the heretic. So contrary to what Salza says, Catholics must wait for the declaration from the church to determine who falls into this category. Wrong. Pope Paul IV completely refutes it by saying that prior to any declaration, Catholics can reject this person if it is clear that he's a heretic. That blows his whole argument out of the water, and I will go through more of his errors in the next part. And it's important to listen to the remaining parts because there are some massive contradictions and some deeper issues involved on which Salza truly stumbles. And in exposing them, we see the full extent of the deception that was involved in this article, as well as in those who obstinately adhere to the anti-pope and the counter-church. This is Brother Peter Diamond, VaticanCatholic.com, continuing with the discussion of John Salza's errors on sedevacantism and a refutation of his article on the issue. In the last section, I was discussing his primary distinction and how it is completely refuted by Pope Paul IV. He distinguishes between, number one, the fact that we all agree on, that heretics lose their offices without the need of any further declaration, ipso facto. But he claims, number two, we need a declaration from the church to know if someone falls into this category where he has lost his office without declaration. I quoted Pope Paul IV in his bull, Cum Ex Apostolatus Officio, who teaches not only number one, that a heretic cannot assume the office of bishop or pope because he's not a Catholic, but he also teaches number two, that Catholics can identify and reject this individual as a heretic without any declaration. And that fact destroys Salza's primary distinction and, in fact, his whole article, because his entire article is built on this distinction. Now, I want to discuss more in this regard. It's clear that Pope Paul IV contradicts Salza and his argument, but the same is true of the 1917 Code of Canon Law, because, as we already mentioned, and he admits, Canon 188.4 contains this principle of the divine law, that those who publicly defect from the faith lose their offices without declaration. Now, what's so interesting about this is in this canon 188.4 of the 1917 Code, which incorporates this principle on heretics losing their offices without any declaration, it has a footnote in the Code of Canon Law. If you consult the Latin version, you can see footnotes for many of the canons. Not every single canon has a footnote, but a lot of them, to show where in tradition or where in past papal teaching they're getting these ideas from. Is it a papal bull or a council or something else? And the reference for Canon 188.4 of the 1917 Code is to Pope Paul IV's bull, Cum Ex Apostolatus Officio. That shows that the two are in harmony. And while it's true that the bull of Pope Paul IV is more expansive on a Catholic's ability to recognize the heretic without a declaration and reject him, Canon 188.4 necessarily teaches the same thing, because both of them include the same core principle that heretics lose their offices without declaration. And Canon 188.4 cites Pope Paul IV's bull, and it's completely unreasonable to believe that the 1917 Code and Canon 188.4 are contradicting Pope Paul IV while quoting him and repeating the core principle of his bull. Are the non-sedevacantists, including Salza, going to argue that Pope Paul IV does in fact teach that a Catholic can recognize and reject a heretic before any declaration has been made, as is indisputable? But the 1917 Code of Canon Law teaches exactly the opposite, even though it quotes Pope Paul IV's bull for its teaching on this matter? By incorporating the principle of the divine law that heretics lose their offices without any declaration, and giving a reference to Paul IV's bull, it's very clear that the 1917 Code is reiterating the traditional principle made explicit in Pope Paul IV's bull, that number one, publicly heretical claimants lose their offices or cannot assume them without any declaration, and number two, such heretics can be recognized and rejected by Catholics. Moreover, as already covered, number one is pointless unless there is an actual application of number two. Furthermore, a true understanding of this principle, number two, that Catholics can also recognize the heretic without a declaration, is perfectly consistent with St. Robert Bellarmine's teaching on this matter. The quotes from St. Robert Bellarmine on this topic are somewhat well known at this point, and it's rather remarkable that Salza would not only so clearly contradict Bellarmine, but the teaching of the Church when he says the following, quote, "It should go without saying that the required declaratory sentence must be given by ecclesiastical authority, Matthew 18:17, Titus 3:10. Of course, nothing in either positive law or divine law permits just any Catholic individual or group to issue declaratory sentences and ecclesiastical censures, nor does the law permit Catholics to licitly resist a duly elected pope in the absence of these required ecclesiastical adjudications." End quote. This is an astounding error. He says that there's nothing in Catholic teaching or the divine law that allows Catholics to reject a man who purports to be the pope unless there's a declaration. Salza not only directly contradicts Pope Paul IV and the traditional teaching of the Church, but also the well-known quotations from St. Robert Bellarmine, who simply explains what the Church has always taught on this issue. St. Robert Bellarmine, in his work on the Roman Pontiff, says, "For in the first place it is proven with arguments from authority and from reason that the manifest heretic is ipso facto deposed. The argument from authority is based on St. Paul, Titus 3:10, who orders that the heretic be avoided after two warnings, that is, after showing himself to be manifestly obstinate, which means before any excommunication or judicial sentence." End quote. So he directly contradicts Salza, who says you must have a sentence. Furthermore, he directly contradicts Salza on his understanding of Titus 3:10 and the other scriptural passages. And what Salza does not understand and corrupts is that a person can refuse to hear the Church not only by resisting an actual declaration from a living member of the Church, but also by refusing to submit to the already established rule of the magisterium. As Pope Leo XIII teaches in Satis Cognitum, the practice of the Church has always been the same. The Church has always held as outside Catholic communion those who would depart from the authoritative rule of the magisterium. That is refusing to hear the Church. You don't need a declaration. So if someone's rejecting Catholic teaching from the Council of Trent, etc., he's refusing to hear the Church. He is showing himself to be obstinate, as St. Robert Bellarmine explains, before any formal excommunication or judicial sentence. So Salza blatantly contradicts what Bellarmine says on this as well. And it should be noted that what St. Robert Bellarmine says is in reference to a man who claims to be the Pope. So he obviously teaches that a so-called pope who is clearly heretical can be recognized and rejected without any declaration. And there's an even more precise and devastating quote I'll get to later, which further refutes Salza and his fellow heretics. Now that we quoted that, I think it's worth asking, is it likely that St. Robert Bellarmine and Pope Paul IV, who both definitely contradict John Salza, that's beyond dispute, also directly contradict the 1917 Code of Canon Law on the matter of a Catholic's ability to recognize a heretic without any declaration, principle number two, while being perfectly in harmony with the code on the related issue of loss of office without any declaration, principle number one? Or is it more likely that John Salza has misunderstood and misapplied the canons he thinks teach a declaration is always necessary for a Catholic to recognize and reject a public heretic? It's obviously the latter. Salza has distorted and misapplied the canons he uses, as I will show very clearly. And so we have Pope Paul IV, Bellarmine, clearly teaching that you can recognize that someone has lost his office without any declaration. We have the code teaching that they lose their offices without any declaration, citing Pope Paul IV. We also have the argument from reason that number one would be pointless without number two if you couldn't recognize it, it's undeniable what the church teaches on this issue. With that said, let's move on to Salza's massive distortion of various canons of the 1917 Code of Canon Law. And you will definitely want to stay tuned for when I get into his astounding contradictions. This is Brother Peter Diamond, VaticanCatholic.com. This is part three of the discussion of John Salza's errors on sedevacantism, refuting his article that attacked the sedevacantist position. In the last part, we left off speaking about how John Salza's primary distinction between the fact that heretics lose their offices without any declaration, and number two, that a declaration is supposedly required for Catholics to identify who is a heretic, is completely refuted by the teaching of Pope Paul IV, St. Robert Bellarmine, who is simply explaining what the Church has always taught, and also by the 1917 Code of Canon Law, because it quotes Pope Paul IV's bull while repeating the core principle that heretics lose offices without any declaration. Nevertheless, Salza's article asserts repeatedly that the 1917 Code of Canon Law, and that's primarily what he relies on, teaches that a declaration is required for a Catholic to recognize a heretic. So now I want to look at the canons he brings up and show how he has misused and distorted them completely. He cites canons 1557 and 1558 of the 1917 Code of Canon Law, and he says, quote, first, the 1917 Code says that the Pope is the sole judge of the cardinals. Canon 1557, paragraph 1-2, says, quote, it belongs entirely to the Roman Pontiff to judge cardinal fathers, cardinal priests, end quote. Moreover, Canon 1558 says, quote, in the causes of which Canon 1556, 1557 treat, the incompetence of any other judge is absolute, end quote. In other words, only the Pope and no one else can judge a cardinal in doctrinal or disciplinary matters. The Pope's authority is absolute in this regard. Unlike the Pope, who has no judge, the cardinals do have a judge, and it is the Pope alone. Therefore, the Pope alone determines if a cardinal, prior to his elevation as Roman Pontiff, has deviated from the Catholic faith or fallen into some heresy. End quote from Salza. So that's the argument he makes, and as I said in my article, this is the type of argument that is superficially persuasive, but in fact completely wrong. Here's why his argument proves nothing. It's because these canons pertain to trials. They have no relevance to the issue. The principle that a heretic loses his office without declaration means without a trial. Without declaration means without a trial. These canons deal with the procedures and processes for conducting trials and are therefore completely irrelevant. In fact, they come within a section called, quote, on trials in general. Canons 1557 and 1558, which he brings up and quotes, simply legislate that a pope alone has the right to preside over the trial of a cardinal or designate the judge at a trial. Certainly that's true. And completely irrelevant, because we're talking about things that take effect without any declaration or trial. The code itself teaches in Canon 188.4, as we already discussed, that the publicly heretical cleric loses his office without any trial or declaration. As Pope Paul IV said, as we already quoted, that this takes effect and the heretic can be recognized, quote, without need of any further declaration. In other words, without a trial. As Bellarmine said, he can be rejected, quote, which means before any excommunication or judicial sentence. In other words, before any trial. So the argument is specious and proves nothing except his own incompetence or malice and his ability to distort canon law. Let's move on to his next misapplication of canon law. It's Canon 1939, and he makes a similar mistake. It's a similar type of argument. He cites this canon and says, quote, the 1917 Code of Canon Law imposes other requirements that sedevacantists ignore. For example, Canon 1939, paragraph 1, requires a special investigation for certain transgressions against divine law, for example, heresy. If the transgression is not notorious or not entirely certain, but has arisen from rumor or public report, Before anyone is summoned to answer for the transgression, a special investigation must be undertaken to decide whether and or what foundation the charge may be founded. End quote from Salza. Once again, completely irrelevant. If you look at the context of this canon, you will discover that it comes in section 2, quote, on particular norms to be observed in certain types of trials, end quote. That means that it is irrelevant to this issue. It's a canon found in the context of other canons that deal with the procedures and processes to be followed in gathering information for and conducting trials. In fact, the subsection in which this canon is found is Title 19 on the criminal trial. That is irrelevant to the principle that publicly heretical clerics lose their offices without any trial. Obviously, the code is going to lay down procedures for how trials are to be conducted and how an investigation should occur in normal times. However, these procedures do not invalidate the principle that the code already taught in Canon 188.4 and was taught by Pope Paul IV and by Bellarmine and flows from common sense and all of church tradition on the external unity of faith, that a clearly publicly heretical cleric loses his office and can be recognized without any trial. And this is especially true when we consider situations in which those who would be held responsible for investigating ecclesiastical crimes are themselves the ones who have publicly defected from the faith, rendering a normal investigation procedure impracticable. And that's why the code and Pope Paul IV and the tradition of the church teach that heretics can be recognized without any declaration. Because if you always had to wait for the declaration, then a Catholic would be at the mercy of the wolf. In fact, in his bull, Pope Paul IV says that he made this decree specifically to make it clear that Catholics could reject such a heretic so that the, quote, abomination of desolation would not take root in the Church of God. In other words, he saw that if people followed this false principle promoted by Salza and similar deceivers, that you always must submit to the man who purports to be the Catholic authority, even if he completely rejects Catholic teaching and is spreading a new religion. They would be following him to their own damnation. And so, to free Catholics from such bondage, they explicate this principle, which is what the Church has always taught, that those who defect from the faith must be rejected, because you cannot have an external unity of faith with people who are denying Catholic teaching. And so, the argument, again, is very deceptive, 100% irrelevant, and false. It deals with trials, and that's irrelevant. And to show the demonic stupidity behind these arguments, we just have to consider that according to Salza and his fellow heretics, Catholics, since they have to wait for a declaration, should profess communion with the Vatican II clergy who themselves profess communion and in fact commemorate as a servant of Christ people like Ted Kennedy, who was in favor of, quote, gay marriage and abortion. According to the demonic stupidity of this argument, you have to profess communion with Benedict XVI, who just last week was in England mocking the English martyrs in a Protestant abbey with a pro-homosexual layperson posing as the Archbishop of Canterbury, head of an Anglican non-Catholic sect which rejects the papacy, rejects Marian dogmas. He gives a, quote, joint blessing with this notorious heretic and engages in condemned interfaith worship with him. This is just standard in the counterchurch. This is totally incompatible with any kind of concept of historic Catholic teaching on heresy, on schism, etc. It's gone. If you listen to any discussion of these events by mainstream Vatican II figures, they do not regard the Protestants and the schismatics as heretics or schismatics. They can't, because Benedict XVI doesn't. And so what has been imbibed is a total repudiation of traditional Catholicism. Heresy is no longer heresy, schism is no longer schism, And this is the end result, the demonic result of the teaching of heretics like Salza, who would have Catholics submit to a clear anti-pope, a heretical monster like Benedict XVI, and pervert Catholic teaching, which truly declares that you can recognize such obvious defectors from the faith as outside the church. It's not a question if Benedict XVI believes in traditional Catholic teaching. He doesn't. It's a fact. So in the next part, I'm going to cover more, and you definitely want to stay tuned for when I get into his astounding and revealing contradictions. In the next part, I'm going to discuss his false claims about the heresies of the Vatican II antipopes and why he thinks they are not public. This is Brother Peter Diamond, VaticanCatholic.com, continuing with part 4 of the discussion of John Salza's errors on sedevacantism. In the last part, we talked about some of his misapplications of canon law and how he wrongly applies canons that deal with the procedures and processes for trials to this issue, and they are irrelevant because the principle at work is loss of office without any declaration or trial. Now I want to look at his claim that the heresies of the Vatican II antipopes are not public. In his article he says, quote, "The alleged heresies of Cardinal Roncalli must be considered not notorious and not entirely certain because they do not meet the definition of public and notorious under Canon 2197 of the 1917 Code. The alleged heresies cannot be considered public under Canon 2197, paragraph 1, because they were not already commonly known, evidenced by the fact that Pope Pius XII neither investigated nor rendered any judgment against Roncalli for heresy, and almost the entire Catholic population accepted Roncalli as Pope. Further, under the same canon, the circumstances were not such as to lead to the conclusion that the alleged heresies would easily become commonly known, evidenced by the fact that over the last 50 years, the College of Cardinals, the four successor popes in almost the entire Catholic world, held Roncalli as a true pope." End quote. Now there are a number of errors to refute in this paragraph. First, notice how he's still applying his completely false understanding of canons 1557 and 1558. We previously discussed how those canons deal with the fact that a pope alone can preside over the trial of a cardinal. They do not teach that you could never recognize that a cardinal is a heretic unless a pope declares it. And so, applying his completely false understanding of that canon, he says you could never say that Roncalli, John XXIII, was a heretic because Pope Pius XII never declared it. This is totally ridiculous. As I said in my article, it's similar to evolution, which starts with a fraudulent fossil and constructs an entire body out of it, and it ends up with a monster. He starts with a false premise and just builds upon it and repeats it over and over again. So his attempted application of those canons is wrong, again, as we already showed. But let's look at Canon 2197.1 and what it says about public. It says, "A crime is public if it is already commonly known, where the circumstances are such as to lead to the conclusion that it can and will easily become so." End quote. So the question is, are the crimes of the Vatican II antipopes public? Of course they are. Is it commonly known that John Paul II and Benedict XVI agreed with Lutherans on justification? Yes, it is. Is it commonly known that they engaged in false ecumenism, condemned interfaith worship, attendance at synagogues, mosques, etc.? Yes, it is. Are there speeches in which they teach that leading heretics and schismatics are in the church, commonly known and public? Yes, they are. To say that they are not public is an assault on common sense. It's an assault on Catholic sense. But what about his claim that the crimes can't be public because almost the entire Catholic world does not consider them to have taught heresy? The answer is that it's irrelevant. Buscarin and Ellis, in their commentary on the Code, explain it well when they say about this canon, "A crime may be public, though known to only a few who are sure to divulge it." End quote. So if most of the population is mired in heresy and bad will, it makes no difference. If the statements and acts are divulged to large numbers in a public capacity, they are public crimes, even if there are only a few people of goodwill and who have Catholic faith to recognize it. So he's completely wrong. Their crimes do satisfy the requirements for public heresy. In fact, many of them come from their heretical public catechism, their heretical official celebrated council, Vatican II, etc. The fact is that all of their heresies are public. And it's so absurd because the opposite of public is a cult. So when Benedict XVI sends out a letter, as he did recently, saying that the Jewish feasts of Yom Kippur, etc., bring down blessings. This is a public letter circulated all over the world. That's actually an occult message or a private letter, according to Salza. No, it isn't. It's a public act of apostasy. And actually, if you see that video we just posted, it is such a specific denial of the Council of Florence, because the Council of Florence says to observe these Jewish feasts and the old law brings spiritual death and excludes one from eternal salvation. While Benedict XVI sends out a public letter to the chief rabbi declaring that their celebration of these feasts brings blessings. So he is directly denying the teaching of the Council of Florence. He does this kind of stuff all the time. It's just public heresy after public heresy after public heresy. But there's another very interesting error into which Salza falls when he's promoting his false understanding of public. Remember that he said that the heresies are not public because, quote, the circumstances were not such as to lead to the conclusion that the alleged heresies would easily become commonly known, evidenced by the fact that over the last 50 years, the College of Cardinals, the four successor popes, and almost the entire Catholic world held Roncalli as a true pope, end quote. Hence, he argues that since the College of Cardinals, etc., accepted these guys as popes, the crimes couldn't be public. Once again, we have caught Salza arguing directly against the teaching of Pope Paul IV. Do you remember this? Pope Paul IV, cum ex apostolatus officio, quote, the promotion or elevation, speaking of a heretic, elected pope, even if it shall have been uncontested, by the unanimous consent of all the cardinals, shall be null, void, and worthless. And he also says, nor through the putative enthronement of a Roman pontiff, or obedience accorded to such by all, the laity shall be permitted at any time to withdraw and reject the individual. So directly contradicting John Salza, Pope Paul IV declares that even if all the cardinals, and in fact, the entire church give this man obedience, his election and acceptance of the office would not be valid, and that the laity shall be permitted to reject him. Was Pope Paul IV contemplating a sin of heresy that could qualify as public? Obviously, he was. Therefore, it's certain that a heresy can be public, even though the cardinals and almost the entire church fail to recognize it. Salza is completely wrong and directly refuted by Pope Paul IV's bull once again. Now I want to move on to Salza's massive contradiction and his outrageous deception and error on Canon 2264. Of all of his mistakes and misapplications of canon law, this might be the most pernicious and the most revealing. In his article he says, quote, the presumption of valid papal elections is also reflected in the 1917 code. Canon 2264 provides that even if a cardinal excommunicated himself for heresy prior to his election to the papacy, his jurisdiction as pope is valid and also licit if recognized by the faithful. And to support this, he cites Canon 2264, which says that an act of jurisdiction carried out by an excommunicated person, whether in the internal or external form, is illicit, and if a condemnatory or declaratory sentence has been pronounced, it is also invalid, without prejudice to Canon 2261, paragraph 3, and it goes on to make reference to 2261, paragraph 2, end quote. So let me explain. He's saying here that according to Canon 2264, even if a cardinal was excommunicated for heresy, and therefore heretic, prior to his election, he would still be the pope, and his jurisdiction as pope would be valid, because this canon says so, according to Salza. Now, before I refute his misunderstanding of this canon, we have caught Salza in a massive contradiction. Remember at the beginning of the article, he admitted that Sedevacantists are correct when they say that a cleric who has excommunicated himself for heresy would lose his office without declaration. That was principle number one, remember? heretics do lose their offices without declaration. His only disagreement was number two, how we can recognize that. But now he's contradicting himself because he's saying that even if he was a heretic, according to this canon, he still would be the pope and would have jurisdiction as pope, and therefore would have his office. Let me quote what he said at the beginning. Quote, Sede Vacantis correctly maintained that divine law expels a formal heretic from the church without further declaration. They point to Canon 188, paragraph 4 of the 1917 Code, which says that all offices whatsoever fall vacant and without any declaration if the cleric publicly defects from the Catholic faith. So he admitted that already. Now he's directly contradicting himself. This is really revealing. Because this is not a side issue. This is a central issue. It demonstrates that he does not understand what he's talking about. That he will just throw anything out there, hoping it will stick. And that his understanding of this canon is completely wrong, and if it were true, would directly not only contradict his article, but what the code teaches in Canon 188.4. And it's beyond dispute that he's contradicting himself, because the Pope's jurisdiction over the universal church is attached to his office. Ordinary jurisdiction is attached to an office. It goes with it. If you lose the office, you lose the jurisdiction. If you have the office, you have the jurisdiction. And so he says at the beginning of his article, they lose their offices if they are in fact heretics. That means they lose their jurisdiction as pope. Now he says, quote, Canon 2264 also indicates that even a pope who as a cardinal excommunicated himself for heresy still has valid jurisdiction over the church. It's a direct contradiction. This is Brother Peter Diamond, VaticanCatholic.com. This is part 5 of the discussion of John Sauls' errors on Sedevacantism. At the end of the last part, I was explaining how in his article against Sedevacantism, which is called The Errors of Sedevacantism and Ecclesiastical Law, he blatantly contradicts himself on a central issue. At the beginning of his article, he admits that the Sedevacantists are correct when they say that a heretic would lose his office without any declaration. He says that this is the teaching of the divine law and canon law, Canon 188.4. So he admits if someone is in fact a heretic, he cannot have an office in the church. However, later on in his article, he directly contradicts himself when discussing Canon 2264 because he argues that according to that canon, even if someone is a heretic, he would retain jurisdiction over the universal church. Since such jurisdiction, that is ordinary jurisdiction, is attached to an office, by arguing that the person who is a heretic retains the jurisdiction over the universal church, he is saying that he retains the office. Hence, he directly contradicts himself on a central issue. And that proves that he does not understand what he's talking about, that his position is completely false, and that he will just throw anything out there, hoping that it sticks. Now, I want to quickly refute what he says in the second half of his article about Canon 2264, even though the first half of his article refutes it. He says that according to this canon, an excommunicated heretic would retain his jurisdiction over the universal church. And this is completely wrong. Simply because the canon is not dealing with loss of office, but rather with the fact that Catholics may receive certain sacraments from excommunicated persons. If you look at the subject heading above Canon 188.4, which teaches that those who publicly defect from the faith, that is heretics, lose offices, you can see that that comes within a section dedicated to loss of office. So if we want to find out what it says about loss of office, we would look at Canon 188.4, which teaches that heretics cannot retain offices. But he misapplies this canon, which is not dealing with loss of office, but something else, and applies it to loss of office. That's why he makes such a big mistake and contradicts himself. What is the canon talking about? The canon is talking about the fact that an excommunicated individual, and it's not only dealing with heretics, it could be dealing with people who are excommunicated in a more minor fashion, but who are still members of the church. It's saying that they can perform certain acts of jurisdiction with validity, not that they retain offices in the church. For example, suppose a bishop is a heretic and has excommunicated himself and thus lost his office, but a Catholic is unaware of this and approaches the bishop for confession. And the bishop hears the confession and gives absolution. The church can supply the jurisdiction to that heretical bishop for the absolution. Therefore, that heretical bishop who is excommunicated can perform that act of jurisdiction with validity, but he does not retain his office in the church. That's the crucial distinction that Salza is unaware of or ignores, and that's why he falls into such an error and such a blatant contradiction. That's what Canon 2264 is talking about, and that's further proven by the fact that the canon itself comes within the context of canons dealing with this topic, and it makes reference to Canon 2261 two times. Canon 2261, if you read it, deals with the faithful approaching excommunicated persons for certain sacraments or sacramentals. Exactly what I'm talking about. That, yes, they can administer certain sacraments, for example, confession, and thus the jurisdiction is given to him for that act, not retaining offices. So he completely took it out of context, misapplied it, and in the process contradicted himself. And I explain more about that in my article. So we've shown that he directly contradicts himself on principle number one, a central issue, and he completely misunderstands and misapplies this canon. But there's something even more revealing. Remember how at the beginning of this discussion, I explained how Salza draws this key distinction between principle number one, the fact that heretics lose their offices in the church, and principle number two, how we can know that. He claimed to admit number one, that heretics do lose their offices, but said we need a declaration from the church to know number two. We already showed that he contradicted himself on number one. Now I'm going to show that he contradicts himself on number two. Because in his discussion of Canon 2264, he argues that this canon means that self-excommunicated heretics retain jurisdiction in the church. We just refuted that. But when he makes that argument, he falls into this second massive contradiction. Here's why. Canon 2264, as I said earlier, makes reference to Canon 2261. And in Canon 2261, points 2 and 3, it says this in point 2. The faithful may, for any just cause, seek the sacraments and sacramentals from one excommunicated, especially if other ministers are lacking. But from a banned excommunicate and from others excommunicated after a condemnatory or declaratory sentence has come, only the faithful in danger of death may ask for sacramental absolution, end quote. So Canon 2261 says that the faithful may approach for the sacrament someone who is excommunicated, but someone who has been declared, they can only approach in danger of death. What does that presuppose? That, of course, presupposes that the faithful can distinguish between someone who is excommunicated by a declared sentence and someone who has been ipso facto excommunicated. Since Salza includes self-excommunicated heretics within the category of individuals under discussion in this canon and the related canon 2264, that means that he unwittingly, that is without realizing it, proves our point that Catholics can recognize on their own that some people are excommunicated heretics but have not yet been declared excommunicated. And that contradicts his principle number two, because he argued that we need a declaration from the church to know if someone has been self-excommunicated for heresy. We have thus caught him in a second massive contradiction, and a contradiction on his principle number two. If we apply his own reasoning, we can show that a Catholic without any declaration from the church can recognize someone as excommunicated and as a heretic before he has been declared to be an excommunicated heretic. So, he's contradicted himself on the two central issues. He's contradicted himself on number one, whether heretics lose their offices without any declaration. And he's contradicted himself on number two, his argument that we cannot recognize someone as an excommunicated heretic until the church tells us. This is not even to repeat all of the points we covered earlier from Pope Paul IV, etc., which prove that Salza is completely wrong. It is rather to focus on his own statements, which prove that he's wrong. In other words, how he contradicts himself.